welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We're here to discuss more apocalypse, and it's about to get stupid. It's time for the back half of episode two. I'm joined, as always, by Miss Shadow Lovely and Slow Beef. Hey.
Hey.
Are you ready to turn a corner into where I went from, like, okay, they're doing, like, bad Fallout to, like, oh, fuck me, what are they doing? This episode, they really, like, they keep it pretty normal until, like, the last 30 seconds, and then it's really just, like, one... It's kind of like you were, like, having a really nice time getting a haircut at the barber, and then, like, as you were walking out the door, he's like, oh, one more thing, and then he just, like, whipped a pair of scissors into your back.
That would be a pretty good bit. If you were, like, a barber slash assassin, I feel like that would be a pretty good bit, actually. Like, oh.
Isn't that Sweeney Todd?
Yeah.
Isn't that what that is? Yeah, okay.
Not only am I good at assassinating, I'm also good at haircuts, so I'm definitely going to do the haircut part, for sure.
Well, you gotta have passions, you know. God forbid women have hobbies.
Yeah.
So, last time, I believe we left off on Langdon interviewing Malcolm or what?
Mr. Gallant. His name's Mr. Gallant.
Mr. Gallant. Yeah, Gallant. So, yeah, we ended up with Langdon interviewing Gallant and it kind of going nowhere other than, like, Malcolm being like, yeah, I'm horny for it.
Yeah, I'm a nasty little gay man who's, like, right. Getting up to, like, shenanigans outside. I liked doing things like sucking bisque through a gas mask to own my grandma and stuff like that.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Wow, yeah.
How could you? It was pure cinema, a pure cinema masterpiece of him filling his gas mask with lobster bisque after saying, yeah, I freaking love lobster bisque.
I think maybe I meant by forgot, I tried not to think about too long and was succeeding until now, but you know, that's okay, whatever.
Also, is it just me or is that like a little weak for American Horror Story that's regularly just had a clown cranking off in frame, well, you know? So having him be like, it's time to suck up the bisque, as opposed to just like whipping his dick out and putting it in the soup and being like, yum.
Or like,
I feel like that would get the job done, right?
Or like shove the gas mask hose like sound somebody's pants, like, I need to inhale some dick or something, you know what I mean? Like literally, and like, but...
Let me get a big whiff.
Right, exactly.
Daddy needs to huff.
Yeah, right.
Baby needs colostrum part two.
Damn it, Liz.
Daddy need dick smell.
Boy smell. Yeah, no, they don't make him that nasty. He's just like what I think, like, I don't know, like maybe someone's Midwestern mom would think a particularly like frisky gay man would be like, I guess. I don't know. He's like,
yeah,
he's
right?
He's not really anything. Like, he's just like a guy.
Well, I mean, the bisque is such like a weak sauce thing, you know, where it's just like, ah, I'm going to enjoy smelling this. Like, I guess you would. It's,
and
you
drowning know, myself, food. Waterboarding myself with bisque because this is like one of those masks that covers from like the eyes down.
Right.
Yeah. And like, I guess the only like real takeaway, in case you guys forgot, they're doing like interviews. Langdon is doing interviews to decide who gets to go to the big special sanctuary.
Right.
And the first person who volunteers is Gallant / Malcolm. And at the end of this specific interview, Langdon kind of like almost like he's like sits next to him. Like he comes around the desk and he like sits next to him and he gets like kind of weird and close and flirty, which you'll find is a reoccurring theme with this character.
I kind of like it. Yeah,
he likes to get a little slutty.
Yeah, he's like this funny like kind of blue baller sort of person, you know, like where he's just sort of like, yeah, like let's sit close and okay, this interview's over, bye, and he just leaves, you know, and then you're just like, wait, what was that? I thought we had
Yeah, imagine if Lestat from Interview with the Vampire was, like, a little less crazy and a little more malicious, but also, like, a lot more horny. Which is saying
right,
something, I know, but, like, a lot more horny.
like a tease, though, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he's not following up on it. He's just making everybody. And it's not like it's restricted to one particular person. He does it to, like, everybody.
He's like Loki, but the trick is to make you kind of horny, and then it's just like you're stuck. Like, you bastard. Like, oh, man, I got all hard, and now nothing.
The blue balls demon.
Yeah, I can't give the big presentation, or everyone will see I have a boner. Oh, jeez.
You got me again.
Classic boner Loki. You did it again.
They couldn't put that in the Marvel movies.
So it would make too much money. Yeah. So we cut back to the teens. And the teens are just kind of making out in one of the rooms, and Emily says, like, oh, I can't believe we're only allowed to have one kiss a week. Which, like, yeah, same brain cell. You get to get caught getting, like, kissing once a week is how that works. You kiss as much as you want, but then you get caught once, and then you have to wait a week.
Right.
That's, like, what that means, right?
Yeah. Like, who's gonna tell you no if they're not, like, watching you? Like, you guys are in a room by yourself making out. Like, clearly, also, like, what are we defining as one kiss? Because you guys are, like, making out. Does that count as one kiss? Because that seems a bit, like, excessive. That feels like a loophole. That feels like soaking at this point.
I was gonna say we're like pushing dangerously close into like edging territory where it's just like, yeah, we make out for like 20 hours straight.
What if they do the Amish thing where like somebody jumps on the bed? Does that count, you know? Or like that?
I think that's one step above soaking. I think that's, it's got a different name. I think that's like the next level of soaking. Soaking final boss. Yeah, I don't get it. And they're like, oh, it sucks so much we can't kiss more than once a week, after they just like fully were making out. And then Emily is like, I'm gonna come up with a cool idea for us so that we can kiss more. We should steal 2 radiation suits and leave so that we can find the new sanctuary. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure if you got there they'd be like, hey, who the fuck are you? You can't come in. We did send a guy to pick some of you out, and it appears that you have bypassed that and gone outside, so we're definitely not gonna let you in. But she thinks it's a cool idea that's, like, good and will work for some reason, and Timothy's like, yeah, okay. And then she's like, we're gonna go search Langdon's room for a clue to find out where the big sanctuary is. We're smarter than him. And I'm like, you don't know him? You're like an 18-year-old girl who went to jail for being at a protest. Like, I don't know that you know that you're smarter than him.
And for the record, yeah, she does say that in case anybody is, like, thinking, like, it's, like, a paraphrase to be funny or something. Like, she literally says, like, we're smarter than he is. Come on now, you know? So... the best,
like,
you know.
He's never, like, presented himself as, like, stupid. If anything, he's, like, presented himself as, like, I don't know, quite intelligent. Or, like, at least, like, educated. Like, he doesn't come across as, like,
sharp.
Someone who's dumb.
Yeah. I think sharp is, like, the lowest descriptor you could give this guy as far as intelligence.
He doesn't feel, like, stupid, like, where you'd say, or whatever. He doesn't feel, like, easy to trick particularly. It just seems like she's just really arrogant. It's like, obviously we're smarter than him, which is maybe not how she wanted it or they wanted it to come across, but is absolutely how it comes across, so, you know.
Me, after I'm recruited for a eugenics program and I immediately buy it, hook, line, and sinker. Well, clearly I've got the best genetics, that's why they got me, so I must be the smartest.
It's my favorite, like, crypto or, like, Bitcoin post with somebody who's like, well, if I got scammed out of my money, what do all the fools have, like, what chance do they have? Which is, like, just so no self-awareness anywhere, but, you know, I love it. Anyway.
Yeah, I feel like it's like, even more, it's somehow even more, I don't know, like, not embarrassing, but, like, aggravating, because the teens are so boring and dry as characters.
Yeah.
That you're like, I wouldn't believe this girl is smarter than Mr. Gallant, frankly. Like,
also, they haven't done anything. They've been shuttled around and harassed, but they haven't done anything. Like, they've kind of just been sitting around and being told what to do and then, like, doing that. Like, am I forgetting something? Did they, like, have any heroic inclination?
No, I don't think so.
They kind of, like, thought about not eating stew, like, the guy, but, like, They didn't. That ended up like going nowhere, and they were like, "No, I don't think that was a guy that we ate." Actually, even though we were the only people who thought it was a guy, we've decided we didn't actually think that. Why would it be? Yeah, this is going to start the subplot of Emmy and Timmy's big adventure in trying to get information out of Langdon's room. But alas, we have to break up every subplot in American Horror Story with other plots. So we're back to Gallant, who is in his room trying to jerk his peanuts. as he's doing that, he gets interrupted by a knock on the door, and he opens the door, and it's a way thicker version of the Rubber Man from season one at the door. Just like a way thicker version of the Rubber Man from season one. And Gallant interprets this to be Langdon in the Rubber Man suit. I guess he's like, well, that guy's kind of like eccentric. I'm sure he'd be into this. And then Gallant like flirts with him. And
like, what are we getting, bisque? But anyway,
yeah, you brought my two favorite things, leather and bisque. and like he starts just like touching and feeling on the figure, and the figure's like, okay, time to do sex. And then they start to do sex, and Evie, his grandma, hears that, and she hears Malcolm getting his back blown out, and, like, spies on them through the door, and she, like, she does, like a pearl clutching, like, oh, how could you? And I'm like, my thing, when I would be like, who is that in the rubber suit? Like, I don't even care that my grandson's getting his back blown out. I want to know who that guy is and what his deal is.
Also, like, I don't think it's that much of a logical jump of, oh, maybe that's that new guy who said he was judging us for everything, and my grandson is seducing him in order to, like, live through the apocalypse or whatever. So, you know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like it's that where she's like, oh my god, I don't believe this. Like, yeah, you can, you know? I mean, alright, you know, but whatever, I guess.
No, they're having, like, very eccentric sex, and that one guy is wearing, like, a full rubber suit, so that obviously wouldn't be, checks notes, the chaotic trickster man who has recently shown up and has shown no proclivity to do anything normally ever.
It's also, like, can I just say, it's, like, a really whatever fetish thing to, like, get freaked out by. Like, that's, like, such whatever kink, right? Like, they're more than fully clothed, you know?
Yeah. They have more clothes than normal. Like,
yeah, if anything, you'd walk in and just be like, huh. And then, like, what? I don't know. It just doesn't feel shocking to me. It's not like there's, like, a dead animal on the floor or something, you know? Like, it's, like, pretty whatever.
I get that she's supposed to be out of touch, too, but it is also, you know, the apocalypse, hence the name of the fucking show. You know what I mean? Like, is it really, like, this is such a big deal right now? Yeah, no.
But you're supposed to put on a rubber to be, like, safe and have safe sex anyway. They're just taking it the extra mile and getting, like, the big rubber that covers you from head to toe. And
frankly speaking, you know, like, with all the things going on, you know, like, in terms of radiation and all that, as far as we know, this is the right move, you know? So,
yeah, this is the safest sex you can have, actually.
Right. You're absolutely correct. Absolutely.
Just feel like anyone else in the bunker cracks open that door and they just go, nice. And then they close the door and walk away, you know? Like, that, hell yeah. And then they move on with their life. But yeah, Evie, after seeing this, decides to go snitch and say, hey, my son was having sex, which means you need to kill him so I can have a better chance of getting into the bunker, even though, like, she has a 0.0% chance. And, like, everyone but her knows this, I suppose.
Mm.
But yeah, goes to go tattle that her son had sex, which again kind of brings up the thing of, but why would gay sex be a problem? But if it's like a population thing,
that's a good point.
Why would gay sex be a problem? Well, all I'm hearing is that we gotta have more gay sex.
Yeah,
that's what this is. Because clearly,
that's what I'm saying. Like earlier, what's her name, Coco, was like, I started jorking my penis with my left hand, and I'm like, see, this is forward thinking. Coco's an innovator that. Like, we should maybe be listening to more. It sounds like she's really got this on lock. Because, like, she doesn't get in trouble for that. She says, like, I was jorking my penis with my left hand, and nobody was like, ew, you can't do that. So it's not like a puritanical thing where you just can't have any sexual intercourse. It just can't lead to, like, pregnancy, I think.
God, it'd be so funny if, like, the next scene Coco's and she's like, gang? You're not going to believe it. I sat on my hand until it fell asleep. It's like someone else is doing it. It's incredible.
And that's why Coco's the hero of this story.
You figured out the meaning of cooperating. You've done it.
Langdon's like, get in my carriage. We are taking you to the new sanctuary immediately. We need innovators
solo
like you.
Stranger.
We need prefix. Yeah, exactly.
We need people like you on our team.
So, Evie goes to snitch. Sure, I guess. We cut to the teens breaking into Langdon's room. They're looking for clues, and luckily he just has a MacBook Pro open and turned on and not even password. I feel like if you were part of the cooperative, you would at least, like, set your MacBook to when you close it, like, need a password when you open it again.
Yep.
Well, he didn't even close it. It's, like, half open on the bed, so that wouldn't have even mattered, I don't think. He just fully just, like, left it on the bed. Like, I imagine the way it's sitting on the bed is I imagine he was typing on it by, like, laying on his stomach and, like, kicking his legs and, like, typing on it like a teenage girl, like, writing her diary. I imagine that was the precursor that led up to this, and so he, like, when he left, he was, like, very giddy and, like, giggling and, like, skipping away, and that's why he left it open. But before I forget, also I would like to point out, because we did split this into two parts, and you may be thinking, if you're listening, it would make sense that Evie would sell out her grandson, because there's limited spaces at the new sanctuary. That's not the case. Michael Langdon made it extremely, extremely clear that he could literally take everybody if he wanted to, or he could take nobody. It's just fully up to him who he wants to take. So, like, there's no benefit to selling out another person in order to, like, secure your place at the new facility. That's never been one of the rules. He's never encouraged that. Like, there's no reason Evie would do this except for that she's shitty. We didn't just, like, forget that. I just want you guys to remember, she does not benefit in any way from selling her grandson out. She's just shitty.
Right.
Yeah. She thinks she does, maybe. Or, like, the writers forgot she doesn't, I think, is also likely.
Yeah, it's probably more likely that one, frankly. Yeah, but MacBook Pro is on the bed, cracked open. It's not plugged in. And as someone who used to have a MacBook Pro, damn, brother, how'd you keep that shit charged? Because that shit dies so quickly. And also, what internet are you using? And then the teens are like, oh, he must be using satellite internet. And I'm like, I don't think that would still be working.
Not how that infrastructure works, yeah.
Yeah.
It's also, for such smart people, it's also not super tough to check exactly. You know what I mean? Like, the network stuff, especially on Mac, you know, you can just, like, kind of look at it and be like, okay, that's what she's connecting to. Got it. But
yeah, you could, like, look at what Wi-Fi he's using.
Right.
And then they go straight to the emails. They, like, open up the emails. And all of the emails are both to and from cooperativeintelligence@gmail.com. Extremely powerful that they got that email address, I think.
I am shocked that they can build all these, but they can't get a domain name, personally. You know?
I was going to say.
They have to use Gmail.
At gmail.com. Like, is that where we're saving bucks? That, to me, has the same energy as OceanGate, where they used, like, a shitty Logitech controller instead of just, like, springing for, like, a PS4 pad. That, to me, is like, really? You couldn't get an email address that was, like, at co-op? That's crazy.
That makes me wonder, like, do you think that, like, the co-op is receiving all of those really, like, pestering emails from Gmail all the time? Like, your storage is almost full. You gotta pay for more storage. Like, even in the apocalypse.
You know what's happening? The feral cannibals are, like, actually just, like, script kiddie hacker kind of people who, like, sort of own them on, like, one of their websites. And then there's, like, a series of bad communications, and now they think there's a problem with the outpost. When in reality, they're, like, their fucking internet sucks. I got this.
True.
I know it.
Yeah. Yeah. So all of the emails are to and from this email address. The timestamps on the email says October 21st, 2021. So they're either bad at, like, fact-checking their own details in their own TV show, or this is set in 2021 instead of 2018, which is when the show came out. They don't, like, ever mention that, so I don't know which one of those it is, but, like, it seems like that would have had to be a choice, because it was 2018 when this show came out, so to set it in 2021 feels intentional.
I feel like the Occam's Razor, like, Path of Least Resistance writing thing is just, like, you set it a couple years in advance, so you could be, like, what's the not-so-distant future kind of thing, you know, so that's... That's my guess on it, but, you know, who the hell knows? Like, the show.
And every season of this show, like, the meat and potatoes of the show, for some reason, always takes place in October. They're like, it's like how Stephen King always sets, like, all of his novels in, like, Maine. Like, right.
Maine,
same
yeah.
thing here. Is there, like, the scariest month of the year is October. So every season of this TV show has to take place in October. And they went with that. Also, them sending Gmail back and forth on a MacBook on, like, the Apple email platform is kind of crazy work for this TV show to be doing.
And Google, right? Like, and Google is, like, still around because they're serving the email, I guess, right?
Yeah,
like,
servers are still up.
Yeah, so that's odd, but okay, maybe, you know, sure.
Yeah, wow. It's crazy because, like, AWS East goes down all the time and, like, the world hasn't ended yet.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know how AWS East is staying up after the world has ended.
That was
it went down, but not because of that, right?
Yeah.
It just happened to be.
It's still getting DDoS.
No, I can't get ads on my smart fridge anymore. Fuck!
My smart mattress is going to lock me in a fully 90-degree position for the rest of my life. Oh, no.
No.
Yeah, the emails, like, so, I scanned the emails to see if there was anything, like, interesting in them. Because sometimes TV shows and movies will, like, hide stuff in, like, the actual, like, text. That, like, oh, if you actually, like, read it, you'd be like, oh, okay. There's not particularly anything. It's just really funny emails from Michael Langdon to the co-op TM that's, like, damn, Venable is dog shit at her job. We have to fucking kill that lady. She sucks so bad. Also, unrelated, there's a guy here named Mr. Gallant. Fuck that guy. He sucks ass. He sucks so bad. There is only two people here that I fuck with, and even those people kind of suck balls. And it doesn't say who those other two people are. And then it pans up to the teens are, like, on the computer reading this. And then it pans up, and the rubber man is, like, stuck to the ceiling like Spider-Man, just watching them. It's very funny.
It's not even a little bit scary or anything. It's so annoying just to see Rubberman.
It's just insanely funny. It's just funny. It's like, I don't remember if Hereditary had come out at this point or not, but it seems like they really wanted to do the Hereditary thing, but they had just, like, no clue what they were doing. So they're like, that's pretty funny. Like, notably, I've been rewatching all of the Halloween movies recently, not like The Holiday, but that's, like, the franchise.
Yeah, that's so funny, actually. My wife and I started watching them.
Hell yeah. So in, like, I would say, like, I think it's, like, Halloween H2O, like, the more, like, the canon ones, not getting into, like, the weird Cult of Thorn ones, but the ones where Michael Myers is still doing Michael Myers stuff. I think it's, like, most agreed upon as being called, like, the Michael Myers timeline, where it's like, we didn't do any of the cult stuff. In all of those movies, especially, I think it's either Halloween 2 or H2O. I think it's Halloween 2. There's, like, three separate scenes where Michael, like, the person, the next victim is, like, looking to, like, find the source of the sound, and they can't find it, and then they walk into a room, and then Michael Myers just descends from the ceiling, and he is, and I'm not joking, holding himself up by, like, two fingers, like, on a pipe in the ceiling, which means Michael Myers was just hanging out in the ceiling, holding himself up with, like, one arm. Same thing here. And it's no less funny. It's no less funny than it is in Halloween, like, to think about.
Well, I love, like, jump scare logistics like that. There's, like, so there's the infamous, do you ever see Friday the 13th? I think it's 3, where it opens with a guy who opens his fridge and sees, like, a severed head in there, and he's like, ah! And then Jason comes out, but they're not near Crystal Lake, so logistically, he had to cut off somebody's head, walk to this dude's house, put it in the fridge, and just hang out in the kitchen closet for the guy to, like, come down for some, like, midnight snack to see the severed head, and then finally he'd go, ha ha ha, gotcha, you know, but...
There's a lot of patience involved in being a slasher that they don't tell you about, a lot of waiting.
Yeah, sometimes you're trying to hit a sweet, like, combo where you, like, scare them down the stairs and they tumble into a springboard that then launches them into the fridge. Yeah.
Oh my
yeah,
god.
Yeah, that's incredibly like Michael Myers coded. Yeah.
Tecmo's awesome deception. I get it. Yeah.
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 Tecmo's rad as fuck deception. Yeah. The new one. So we cut to Venable hanging out at her fireplace. She loves this. Langdon pops up and just goes, hey, so, I'm on to you, which is like, you know, okay. He's like, hey, so about where'd that no sex or we kill you instantly rule come from? And she's like, you know, I got it. It was a secret message. He's like, I am the council man. You realize that? Yeah. She's like, more secret. It was too secret even for you. He's like, I literally wrote every secret message. No, this one was more secret.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, where is it? And she's like, it's gone. And
I hate it.
Yeah.
It totally doesn't work. Like, I'm sorry. You know what I mean? Like, it's absolutely the most unbelievable lie you could ever tell. And yet,
and
you know.
It's funny because she's so dedicated to it that you see, like, for a split second, even he's like, well, I can't, like, argue with you. You're so committed to this lie that, like, what am I going to do? Like, I can't, like, you're gaslighting me. Like, what am I supposed to do?
It's one of those moments where you're like, how can the person telling the lie even think this is going to work? Like, where does that kind of conviction come from? Because, like, this is clearly bullshit. It's like, as soon as he's like, I'm the guy who writes the secret messages, like, there's no part where she wouldn't just go, damn, I'm cooked. Well,
yeah,
it was fun.
She pulls out the final boss of, like, deflection, which is you're being misogynistic right now, actually, by questioning me. You're being misogynistic right now. It's because you're a nasty man and men are always questioned when ladies have any type of power, and he's just like, yeah,
that's
man, okay.
Woman as a hobby.
Yeah.
Yeah. Enforcing a weird Quaker sideways thing on everyone.
She loves doing this.
Yeah, and then she goes on a little rant after being like, hey, you're being misogynist for calling my blatant lie. She goes, yeah, you know what? This is horse piss. All the co-op's men, too. You're all men, and you're the men who set off the nukes and blew up the world, which then Langton's like, okay.
Yep.
All right.
Fair point. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, he's just like, yeah, all right. Well, so the outside's real fucked up. And this is where he really starts to do, like, some real, like, little shithead shenanigans. He loves doing this where, like, he'll just, like, start doing something arbitrarily. And then he's just like, I'm not doing that bit anymore. And again, it's very funny as an outsider watching, because he's like, okay, well, you think you've got this all figured out. Well, I've been on the outside. And do you know what the fuck's out there? There's, like, so many people fucking dying out there. And on my way over here, we found a mother and her two children, and one of the kids was already dead, and the other kid was, like, super fucked up, and she was super fucked up, and she begged for me and my men to, like, kill her, or kill her kid, rather. And he's crying while he's telling this story, by the way. It's, like, a very emotional moment. and because she was too weak to be able to kill her own like child who was like in clearly in agony. And then fucking Venable's like, that's horrible. Did you mercy kill the kid? And then he's like, Lamau, no. And then he just stands up and walks away. Incredible energy off of this man. Truly chaotic energy at all times. And then he walks over to the desk. There's always a desk in every room. Just assume there's a desk in every room. And he like kind of leans on it in a very bisexual, like Skyrim Jarl type way. And he's like, okay, well, let's talk about the other candidates who might be going to the new sanctuary. How about Coco? And Venable's like, I fucking hate Coco. She's the product of a lot of inbreeding. And I'm like, I don't think that's like...
Not
a billionaire thing.
Yeah, you're thinking she's like a coddled Nepo baby fail daughter, if you want to go for that angle. And like, that's fine. Inbreeding's like a specific thing where you like keep people like fucking their cousins.
Yeah.
You know?
That's so, like royal family
Royal family. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like very explicitly for you're trying to like keep power consolidated in a purely genealogically distributed power structure, like, yeah, royalty stuff. Not just, she's never had to work a day in her life. That's not inbreeding.
Yeah, I don't even know where she's, like, coming at this, like, from. Like, I don't even know where this, like, came from. It's not even, like, someone has, like, mentioned that or anything. Like, it's never been mentioned in passing. It's just... something she pulls out of the air. She just was like waiting for someone to ask her how she felt about Coco so she could say it, I guess.
Just start rumors. Yeah. Like, yeah, I'm gonna be the gossip monger of Outpost 13. Here we go.
Yeah. It's a very strange way for her to react. And then without like him prompting any further, because like he doesn't really respond, she immediately starts going off on like everybody. Like saying how much she hates everybody, and like the next person is she's talking about Gallant and she calls him a cowardly homosexual, which feels like it feels like worse than a slur. She should have just called him a slur because like the way she says it sounds way worse. I don't know why. And then she calls Evie an old leech.
It's because it the way she delivers it sounds like the way you would deliver like phrenology information, like the old Simpsons bit of like, oh, you would think that you have the sloped brow of a stagecoach tilter or something,
right,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Like, she's got that kind of energy to it where she's like, oh, he's got the small head of a cowardly homosexual. Like it's very like, oh, that's wrong. Oh,
like that. Bad mouthfeel.
Yeah, it comes off as like old timey, like evaluating the shape of your skull.
Yeah.
And then Evie is just an old leech who refuses to die, which, like, yeah, you know, that one's actually probably
about right. Yeah, that's fair. That one's fair.
Yeah.
And then Dina, the Oprah analog, like, she's just like, yeah, and I don't actually know a lot about her. I don't really talk to black people much. It's like... That's, like, all she has to say is just, like, yeah, I don't talk to her a lot. Like, great. Thanks for your input, man. Isn't this your whole job?
You lived with her for 18 months, you know? Like, you should know something. Like,
yeah,
you
never asked her a question. You never, like, looked into... You, like, have their files, I'm pretty sure. You can't just, like, look into their files and, like, say, like, oh, yeah, it says in her file she's, like, allergic to shellfish or whatever. Like, just nothing. No info whatsoever. And after her little outburst, Langdon's like, wow, sounds like everybody here sucks ass. That's crazy. Anyway, take off your dress. I gotta do a physical exam on you. And she's like, no. And he's like, I want to see your shame, whatever that means. And then he like walks around her and she like lets him unzip the back of her, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children ass dress. It shows her back. She doesn't get naked, to be clear. She does not get naked.
Right.
It's just her back, and I think the implication is that she has scoliosis. Like, I guess that's the implication.
I didn't realize what it was until he said, like, afterwards you have scoliosis or something, because it just looks like they put, like, You know the kind of like fake scar makeup they'll do to like give an actor a fake scar? It's like they just did a really big one of those on her back. It doesn't really indicate, it didn't read as scoliosis to me, especially because like she doesn't like hunch at all anyway. Like they're trying to imply that it's like a big hunchy scoliosis and she just hasn't done that like ever.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, they gave her the cane and they were like, that's enough to imply that this is what her deal is. And like, it's not like that big of a deal. It doesn't like keep her from doing stuff. Like, you can't tell she has it. Like you said, she doesn't have like a hunch or anything.
I'm not an expert either, but I didn't think scoliosis like necessarily had anything to do with like scarring, you know? Like
No.
So like what, I don't get that part of it at all, but it's there, I suppose.
I think they realized they wanted to like, because the other thing too is like scoliosis is just like a sideways thing.
It's like a spinal
where like
curvature,
it kind of wiggles out to the left or the right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It just like doesn't go straight up and down your back. So, like, scoliosis is, like, you know, pretty bad, but it doesn't, like...
People live with it.
She isn't disabled enough to have, like, the full bad scoliosis, right? It's just, like, they felt like they needed to have her have something, and they realized they, like, didn't give her anything until now. They're like, what can we just, like, hide? Like, I don't know, she has scoliosis, which has a huge scar on her back, I guess?
Yeah, she's got the skin scoliosis. They don't talk about that version as much, I guess. Which is even more confusing because next he's like, touches it and he's like, does it hurt? And she says no. And then he's like, but does it bring you pain? And then she cries and says yes. And I just know that when they were writing this, they thought that line was so fucking fire, was so fucking like a huge heater.
Right.
They delivered it in a way that like, the pause for applause is like baked into the show.
Like somebody like sweating over their computer, like, here's my fucking Emmy finally.
Also, it feels like another case of American Horror Story being like, there, and now everyone will know this woman was treated as unfuckable. And I'm like, scoliosis? Really? I don't know. Maybe that's me being a little loosey-goosey guy or something, but I can't imagine being like, oh, she had scoliosis, I'm out.
She's going to be a couple inches shorter as she gets older. Oh, man. Get the fuck out of here. What a butter face. Or butter back, actually.
Yo, what a butter spine. Yeah.
She's got to have perfect posture. Shit. She's not getting this wiener. That's my rule. That's my one rule. Speaking of
Robert Langdon, Michael.
Yeah, from Michael. Who are you, Michael Langdon? Speaking of Michael Langdon.
In this scene too, I feel like he also does the thing because like as she's got her like dressed off, he kind of like seems like he's leaning in for a kiss, and then she does too. He goes, okay, well, that's it, bye. And he just kind of like abruptly leaves, like with.
That's his favorite way to leave the room. Yeah.
He saw someone do it one time, and he's like, "This is how you're supposed to do it when you're like going to leave a room. You like go in to like almost kiss somebody, and then you leave. Like you have to do the blue ball exit every time.
Just embarrass them, exactly. You know what I mean? Like yeah, like oh, you thought, oh no, gotcha." Haha, Langdoned.
Yeah, you got Langdoned, and then he does like a Fortnite emote on her.
You got co-opted. Yeah, exactly. But
yeah, and he almost kisses her like he did with Gallant, and then like as he's walking away after he's blue balls her, Mead comes in and is like, "Oh, I gotta talk to Venable," and I'm like, "I don't think you should be allowed to interrupt this meeting," like not to be chill for the co-op or anything, but this kind of seems like something that's like a step above. Like you don't walk in on the CEO talking to your manager without knocking. Like you wait for that meeting to be over before you go in there.
Or even Venable, I don't think, would want that. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, I'm trying to like secure my fucking position in the goddamn like other place, so why don't you step the fuck off there, you know, Mead? But
yeah, and then she's like, guess what? There's important information. Mr. Gallant was fucking the rubber man. We don't know who that was. And then Venable's like, okay, well, who do we think it might be? And then they both arbitrarily decide also that it was probably Langdon. And then she also arbitrarily decides that Langdon and Mr. Gallant knew each other before coming to the bunker. Feels like Malcolm / Mr. Gallant's being set up here for failure. Anytime he's not in the room, people are talking shit about him or like framing him for a crime. He's just like incapable of, or being snitched on. Like, he's incapable of not taking an L. And so they've decided that he has to go to the torture sauna. So Venable takes him to the torture sauna and chains him to a ceiling and is like, okay, how long did you know Michael Langdon? And then he responds with some bullshit like, I've known him in my soul always. And then Mead whips him with like a real whip. And I'm like, why did you guys bring a real whip to the nuclear fallout bunker?
That's okay, because he has the most realistic response to being whipped I've ever heard in any media whatsoever. Which is by yelling out the names of prominent gay men to be brave. I'm not joking, and that's what he says he's doing. Cause he goes
just
like,
from the
Rip 70s Taylor.
And 80s. Just the 70s yeah, and 80s, which I feel like, right, he's gonna run out of them pretty quick, I think. Like, I think they're going to win the battle of attrition here.
This is like a Gex quality bit, I think, where he's just like listing celebrity names and I guess I'm supposed to hear them and be like, nice. I know that. Nice. Keep it up. Woo! You can look up a list of actors too. Incredible. Whoa.
It's so weird. Like, but it keeps going, you know, because she whips him a few times and just like, Harvey Milk. And it's like, all right, well, yeah, he was brave. I mean, I'm sure, you know, I'm sure he's like, would have appreciated this, but oof.
Then Gallant gets a boner and Venable's like, we got to stop this. He's getting a boner. This sucks. We have to leave.
This didn't work out like we were thinking. Yeah,
he likes this. He's too much of a little freak and he likes this. So they leave him chained up. And then Langdon does show up and like starts touching the whip marks and Gallant's like, don't worry, I wouldn't have ratted you out. And he's like, ratted me out? The fuck are you talking about? I didn't do anything. And Gallant's like, oh, we had sex like a couple hours ago. And he's like, I don't know who the fuck you had sex with, but it wasn't me. I would not fuck you if you were the last man on earth, and you are,
and you
pretty close
are.
Yeah, you're pretty,
yep,
close,
oh,
to,
yeah,
being that. Bye.
That's right, yeah.
You fucking loser.
That's still not, I think, Langdon's line of the day, which I feel like is the absolutely incredible, after that he's like, the hole you need filled isn't in your mouth or your ass, it's in your heart, which is like,
hell yeah, brother. Hell yeah, brother.
What are we doing? Like, get the hell out of here. No, I do not accept that at all. I'm sorry.
Chicken soup for this boy's hole. That's right.
Written by Michael Langdon. Oh my god. Yeah. He's like, you suck so bad. I would never fuck you. You suck so bad. You're a weird little loser baby and I hate you. Also, your grandma fucking hates you and she sold you out because she hates you. Here, your chains are off. Bye bye. And that's the end of that interaction. Now we're in the library again because there's only three set pieces in this show. Dinah, who's the Oprah stand-in, is looking at the radio with Coco and Evie, and a song called Time in a Bottle is playing, which means that we have new music now. I guess that happened since Langdon showed up. Or they can change it, I'm not sure which. Then Dinah gives like a weird speech about how that song was in an episode of The Hardy Boys where like one of their girlfriends dies or some shit. Who fucking cares? I don't know who this is for. And then Coco speaks what I was thinking, which is, this is boring as fuck. What the fuck are you talking about? And then Mallory comes in and Mallory and Coco like dunk on the boomers for a little bit and have some solidarity. Because like Mallory, though she is a gray, is still like, she gets to hang out with Coco and they like talk very casually. It's not like Coco is now like, oh, I'm above you now, Mallory. Like, they still have a very like close relationship with each other. And then Malcolm / Mr. Gallant shows up and starts to yell at Evie. And Evie's like, yeah, I did that shit. I'd do it again too. Fuck you. I hate you. You suck so bad. I hate you so much.
Thanks for bringing me to the bunker, by the way, and yeah. saving my life. But yeah.
yeah. and she's like, well, I had to sell you out so that I could go to the new sanctuary. And I'm like, that was never one of the rules. I don't know where mm-hmm. you came up with that idea. Nobody said that ever. You have enforced this rule on yourself. Then they get into an argument about her being old and then him going to, like, rehab. I guess he had a drug problem, and I guess his grandpa hated that he was gay or something. He did a bunch of cocaine, and he, like, bankrupted a few salons. And I'm like, well, his last salon is literally the reason you two are in this fucking bunker right now. So it's not yeah. that big of a failure because both of you are alive. And apparently he's pretty good at being a hairstylist because Coco likes him. And as long as you have a really rich person who's willing to keep you on payroll to do their hair, sounds like you're a mm-hmm. successful fucking hairstylist to me. Maybe that's just my opinion. Yeah. And then Evie's just like weird and shitty to her grandson for like a long time. And he finally is just like, why can't you just like be nice to me? Why can't you just like be a nice grandma to me? Why are you being like mean to me? And she's like, because I'm shitty. Yeah, that's about basically. It. I'm shitty. I'm just a shitty person. Lamau, see you later. And Coco's like, well, good thing we brought your Nana. And I'm like, Coco kind of cooked with that one. I'm not going to lie. Yeah,
right?
Yeah, Coco's kind of real for that. like, Coco's like, good thing we fucking saved a spot for Nana. Good thing my driver, who like John Wicked a bunch of people to keep us safe, stayed behind and died in the blast, and we took your grandma instead. And then we're back to the boring teens. The boring teens are back, and they think everything's a lie. I don't know why they think this or why we're supposed to care about it. At this point, it's like not a conflict for anybody besides the teens. So, like, it doesn't matter. Like, they have decided to have a new subsidiary conflict that none of the other characters are having. And it's very confusing why they've decided to do this.
So, yeah, I think they're working on, like, an implied knowledge or, like, an implied importance or something. Like, we're just supposed to assume that the teens are the protagonists and therefore, like, they know what's up and they're doing something important. But you're right. They have nothing. They're working on nothing. They're working on no evidence. They're working on no reasoning either. They're just kind of like, oh, yeah, things are bad. I can feel it in the air. Like,
right.
I think that was kind of the point of having, I already forgot his name, Adam, whatever.
Timothy, Timmy and Emmy.
Timmy and Bimmy. Right. And when Timmy was, like, had his moment of thinking, oh, don't eat the soup, that's a guy in there, before, like, anyone else touched it.
Right.
I think that was supposed to be us having the realization of, like, oh, these teens know. Like, they don't, and I don't trust them. You can't be, you will never be, you could literally have a show about psychic teens that know the future, and the entire conceit is that the teens know the future, and I would be like, I don't trust those teens to know the future.
Especially these teens, these specific teens. These teens kind of suck. These teens suck really bad. Yeah. And they're not even smart enough to know you can make out when nobody's looking. Like, they're, for what we see, not very smart overall. But yeah.
And this is the best humanity has for to offer.
Yeah, so this is the best genes we have. Like, and the thing
they're not horny enough or smart enough. Like, either one of those things would have pushed them into action, but they lack both.
Yeah, and so, like, and the other thing is, like, they're, like, hemming and hawing about, like, the information they quote-unquote found in the emails, and I'm like, you didn't really. You just found out, like, some, like, admin, some, like, I don't know, like, line of communication between management of, like, this one sucks. Like, we have to fire this, like, project manager because she's bad at it. Like, she's really bad at this.
And they didn't call it out.
You found out the Venable was lying, which, like, obviously. of course.
Yeah, but, like, everything that, like, Langdon has said was, like, I would say verified, basically, by his emails. Like, everything that he said, that there was an email about, like, the other outposts being overrun, that he had sent to the co-op. Like, he basically confirmed all the stuff he told the people. And I would say that if he's there now and he's in charge, it really doesn't matter if Venable lied or not, because he's probably going to handle that. It seems like in his emails, he has already discussed that he is going to handle it. They don't really need to be involved in it, frankly. Like, I don't know why the teens feel like, well, these emails mean that we have to do more right. stuff now.
We've solved the case of the end of the world, you know, or whatever. So, right.
Also, the teens have, like, there's, like, a vested interest from the co-op to keep the teens safe. Like, they have been determined to be the genetic material of the future. Everyone else at the bunker, they can just be like, yeah, fuck a Coco. Who cares?
Right,
like,
whatever. Right. Who's it?
Oh, Oprah. Tough shit.
Yeah.
Like, the kids are the one that they're going to maybe, like, try to protect. Like, if Langdon goes and kills everybody but brings back the teens, the co-op would probably be like, yeah, you did what you had to.
Yeah.
I think if the teens are gone, they'd be pissed. Like, right?
Yeah, I think you're right, right? Well, at least under the assumptions that we're working with currently. Yeah, exactly. But...
yeah, also...
But yeah, we have no reason to distrust Langdon. Liz is 100% right. Everything, like, Langdon acts tricksy, but everything he says matches mm-hmm. with the current presentation of reality.
Like, I guess they're, like, yeah. the reason they don't trust him is because when he showed up, he's like, I'm taking some of you, and the ones that I leave behind, here's a suicide pill so that you don't get eaten by cannibals. And that's supposed to be, like, interpreted as, like, malicious, but, like... It's not like he's saying, like, I'm going to kill you with a gun if I think you suck. Like, he's like, no, I'm just not going to take you with us if I think you suck and shouldn't be at the new... Is it, like, weird and elitist? Sure. But it's not, like, malicious. He's not, like, hunting them for sport like it's the Hunger Games or making them fight to the death.
I'll be the devil's advocate or the opposite social. I'll say, it's not great. You know, I'm just like, look, yeah. you don't deserve to live. It's kind of like eugenics by deciding I'm not going to save you or whatever. Like,
but they've
you
already
know,
done the eugenics. We're already past the eugenics because they only saved two people they thought had the best genes. So we're like past the eugenics part, I think. I think we're already like fully sold on the eugenics as far as the people in the bunker go.
Yeah, even the teens are starting to buy into the eugenics. They're like, yeah, we are better.
Yeah, that's true.
That's right.
Okay. All right. But...
Unfortunately for us, they're not in any way. They're not better than any person that's ever been. If you could go into any, like, American high school, you could find these two teens, like, I don't know, scrolling TikTok in the corner on their phone saying 6'7" or some shit.
Those teams would probably have figured out some sex loopholes that these ones are, like, stuck on, you know?
Yeah,
but, all right.
True.
Right.
Yeah. And so they're like, we think that they're lying to us about everything. Oh, no. And they decide that, fuck it, chuck it football. We should have sex because fuck these guys. And I'm like, well, yeah, man, in the fucking emails, literally, Michael Langdon is like, yeah, Venable, like, made this weird no sex rule. That's fucked up. She sucks at this. We should kill her. Like, you're not being rebellious. You just now know that you're allowed to have sex and that it's fine. Like, you're not, like, breaking a rule anymore. You just found out that there isn't a rule and you're just allowed to do it. It's not like an act of defiance. But alas, they have sex and the rubber man shows up while they're having sex.
And the rubber man can smell it.
Yeah, he loves this.
The rubber man can smell the sex. He just crawls in through a vent and goes, bisque.
He's like, I just had some of this an hour ago. Yeah.
Yum, yum, yum.
And back to our other set piece, the library again. Malcolm's on the couch crying and sulking. There was no follow-up as to him trying to figure out who the person in the rubber man suit was. Michael Langdon was just like, that wasn't me. And then there was no follow-up done as to maybe who it was. I feel like if I had sex with somebody and then I talked to that person like an hour later and they were like, that wasn't me, I'd be like, okay, I need to go ask a few people some other questions, I think. Right. I think I should probably, there's only like 10 of us in this bunker. I should probably identify which one of them was in that suit. Or if maybe it was none of them, because then that's a whole new set of questions of like, maybe who is it then if that's not them? But he does not do that. And then the song changes again. They keep changing the song as though we're supposed to give a shit about this. But this mechanic right? of this season is like nothing for no one. They just want to flex how many like licensed songs they have, I guess. this song is Gold Dust Woman by Fleetwood Mac, which is nothing to anybody. And then
also... they do try to play it like they have to listen to the same song over and over and that they like hate it. This is the one thing that Langdon doesn't mention is like, was that the rule? Is like, yeah, no, you do have to keep the radio on and everyone does have to listen to it. The cooperative actually thinks that part is fucking based. You do have to do that.
They think it's funny. They think it's funny how much you hate it. We keep, yeah, we like to rile you up. Next 2 weeks,
hamster dance. They're going to go crazy.
after that, Katy Perry on loop. And not like old Katy Perry, like new Katy Perry.
No.
and then the rubber man shows up to the library, and Malcolm's like sick, and he like follows them, and then the rubber man has his Heelys on and he's fucking cruising around the compound, and Malcolm has to like run after him, and they play like a weird game of hide and seek, and he finally finds the rubber man in one of the bedrooms, and they start to try and have sex again instead of talking, and like this could have all been one scene, but they decide to interject the other scenes in it as well. So we go back to the fucking teens again. The teens have already had sex, and then they get snatched up by Meade. And the character who I think is named, like, the fucking fist or some shit. the hand or the fist or something. The really tall lady.
Right.
Snatch up the teens. Then we're back to Malcolm and the Rubber Man having sex, and Malcolm tries to take his mask off, but it doesn't work. And so Malcolm does the logical next move, which is to stab him about it, like a lot. I guess he thinks it's Michael Langdon. As he is stabbing the fuck out of the Rubber Man, who he is sitting on top of, Langdon just walks in the room with this like shit-eating grin on his face, like, "What are you doing, bud?" and then a Gallant looks back down, and instead of the Rubber Man, it's Evie, who he stabbed a whole bunch, which is probably for the best. Everyone fucking hated her, so like that's probably good. But that's like an ooh moment, and it's very funny. When he walks in, it's very funny. When Langdon walks in, it's very funny because he's like, "What are you doing, bud?" And it's stabbing his grandma is what he's doing. But now it's time to punish the teens, I guess. And now
also, this does truly feel like a murder that everybody collectively would be like, "Oh, nice." Like,
yeah, that was fine.
No one really,
right, yeah.
Yeah, no one would really be too mad. Like, I think the worst response you would get is like, "Malcolm? Really? Didn't think he had it in him."
Yeah.
Like, that's really all it would be.
I mean, like, basically...
No, like, half a cube for dinner and then we're all good, okay? That's your pun.
You
would have
been without dinner.
Like,
that's the thing is, like, they establish all these rules about, like, not fucking, but I don't think there is a rule about not killing anybody else. Like, they never outright say it. So, like, I think as long as you didn't kill one of the teens, you're probably okay, frankly, because that's, like, one less person that you have to feed. Like, I don't think the co-op cares.
Also, like, Danganronpa rules?
Yeah.
If you kill someone without getting caught, you leave or something?
Yeah. I don't think they care that much. But they do fucking care if you're having sex. They hate that. So Venable's yelling at the teens because they had sex. And then Timothy, without any pressure applied to him whatsoever, immediately just says all of the things they've been doing, just, like, confesses all of it. Under literally zero pressure, folds immediately. And Venable's like, "I don't care about that. I care that you guys had sex. That's all I care about."
Yeah, because it's supposed to be that, like, "I know everything now. Like, you made up that rule and all this stuff." And she's like, "Yeah, whatever." Like, it's, like, supposed to be like, "I gotcha." And like, "No, you don't. I'm still in charge here." Like, you know, didn't really do anything.
Yeah, you still weren't supposed to have sex. I hate it. I hated that you did that.
Yeah. She kind of hits him with the classic white person, oh yeah, you in what army? But like, regrettably, she is backed by the army at this moment.
Right. Yeah. And so it's time for the teens to go get executed. And I'm like, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that that's probably not what the co-op would want. Even if you did get a quote unquote, like, secret message. Like, that's bad. Like, you need them, allegedly. And frankly, you need probably whoever you can get that isn't, like, full of radiation to, like, help people stay alive. But alas, they're going to go get executed. We get flashbacks to the two Greys that got executed from before, as though we have forgotten for some reason between the last episode and this one what would happen if they had sex. They both get shoved into the shower room for naughty boys that Stu and Gallant got shoved into before. And, like, Timothy starts, like, crying and is like, I'm so sorry that this happened. And they, like, get ready to shoot him. And then Timothy grabs the guard's gun and shoots Meade and then gets knocked the fuck out by the fist. And would someone else like to explain what happens after Meade gets shot?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So we frame in on Meade's wound, presumably, but it's not leaking regular blood like a normal wound, and there's not bone and sinew and fluids and associated bits of flesh underneath. It is, in fact, circuitry and some kind of white, I presume, nanite-related paste coming out of her. Because that's right. Kathy Bates is a fucking robot.
Let's go! Let's go! No.
Let's
Hell
go
yeah!
Back before that happened, I hate it so much.
This is really where, like, for me, this was an instant, oh, we gave up. Like, at the end of episode two, like, any and all reason is out the window. Because as soon as someone can secretly be a robot, someone can secretly be an alien. And as soon as someone can secretly be an alien, it's all up for grabs. Like, it could be any. What if that guy's just Cthulhu? Well, I guess we fucking lose. I don't know. Like, there's just no rules at that point. If someone can just secretly be a robot. And, like, here's the other thing. The only tell we've had that there may be something somewhat robotic about the enforcers is the one lady getting bit on the hand by a snake and just kind of not responding. But that also could have just been thick glove, you know?
Like, or she just was built different. Like, she's just about it. Like, she just doesn't care.
Yeah, she's, like, got a taste for the venom. She wants a little bit, God, just to feel alive.
I hate this so much. I'm going to hate it even more, you know, later, but I hate it now. I don't like it, but that's just me.
But I'm very excited, because the fact that Kathy Bates is just a robot, also, like, full behind the scenes here, I'm aware that this is the season that, like, ties together other elements, like, it involves the witches to some extent. There's some stuff with the house or whatever. There's probably some connection to the aliens and fucking asylum. But they have done none of that yet and have shown no inklings of how they're going to hook those parts in. So I am so excited to episode 3 or 4 just randomly have an entire new plot line shoehorned in. It's going to kick ass.
Yeah, we haven't really done robots yet. There's not really been robots in American Horror Story. Yeah.
But you know what annoys me also is the secret robot thing was done in Alien, so they, and so it was like this, you're wounded and circuitry's happening, but it was so much better there, and here, yeah, like episode 2, before anything gets going, it's like, yep, secret robot, haha, well, I guess we blew our loads next.
Like,
yeah, and
this truly, to me, does feel like they realized they didn't have a strong enough hook at the end of this episode. Like, because what was the big hook gonna be? Oh, you stabbed the rubber man and it was actually this tertiary character was killing this other tertiary character that you kind of don't like and were hoping someone killed. Like, yeah, that's not really like a big knock him out of the park hook, I don't think.
No, it's not.
If it ended on Evie being killed, I think everyone would just be like, cool.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So, next episode is named Forbidden Fruit, which I guess. I thought we were already did the snakes in the Garden of Eden and tempting, and they, but they already did sex. Whatever. Whatever. Till next time.
Woo. Yippee. Have a great night, everybody. Bye.
So long.